Welcome to the Rhone Podcast. Rhone is a curated physicians network that supports concierge, DPC, and private practices so they can remain independent without being alone. We believe that the future success of primary care requires membership-based medicine practices to thrive. Hello, I'm Dr. Scott Pope, CEO of Rhone, and I'm glad you found us. I hope you enjoy this latest episode of the Rhone Podcast. Welcome, everyone. We've got an outstanding episode of the Rhone Podcast for you today. My guest is Dr. John Patt, Associate Medical Officer with Duke Private Diagnostic Clinic. Dr. Patt, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
So many of the Rhone's podcast listeners come from a background of independent practice. They are out on their own. They've hung up their own shingle. Many of them are, one or two physician practices. Some of them have grown to, have more than a dozen or so physicians. But you get to bring a very interesting perspective to our listeners today, and I'm thrilled to have you on board. Through your association with Duke and the Private Diagnostic Clinic, tell us a little bit about your background, and then tell us about your practice.
Sure. So thanks again for allowing me to be here. I've been in practice for over 30 years, and I always describe my experiences as a pendulum and a clock moving back and forth. And the further you move, it seems like you're always back at the beginning. My father was in private practice, and I remember his practice of medicine, which is, personal touch, individualized medicine, doing house calls and doing those things that I thought, and that was one of the reasons I went into medicine. Early on in my career, I had the opportunity to join a staff model HMO where concepts of organized medicine and clinics sort of became the norm. I remember my father saying, "Why do you want to join that type of practice when you could be in private practice?" And I think when you think about a group practice, whether it's an academic practice or larger practices, there are advantages. And actually, ever since that time, I've always been in a large group practice. I had the opportunity to move to North Carolina in 1990. And at that time, I was exposed really to an academic model where we did teaching, we did patient care, and we did it in a rubric of an academic medical center, which initially made me think about how I wanted to practice medicine. And practice medicine and academic medicine in the 90s actually started to change as we started our foray into managed care, full capitation. And those were some early models. In 2000, I had the opportunity to move to Mayo Clinic. And again, a different experience where service was really the model that they sold. Great medicine, great staff, great service at a high level. And really, as a general internist doing general medicine, primary care medicine, really allowed me to understand what I really wanted to do. When I was training early on, it wasn't primary care medicine, it was ambulatory medicine. And the whole concept of ambulatory medicine has really grown over time. I returned back to Duke about 10 years ago. And they really wanted me to see if I could help create a service practice, which is what a concierge practice is, a service practice within an academic medical center. Again, coming back to Duke after 10 years, they still had a gazillion specialists and just a couple of itty-bitty primary care physicians. And so patients, I think, were looking for a model where a physician could spend time, coordinate, and talk about somebody's care. And those are really the essential models of a concierge practice. Putting it in a financial model that made sense within a complex academic medical center is important. And then looking at, again, the advantages and challenges of working within an academic medical center from a patient's perspective, obviously, but also from a physician's perspective.
So tell us a little bit more about the details of your practice. I know that over the last couple of years, you've seen pretty remarkable growth, adding new physicians and even more patients.
Yeah, I mean, so there's always been sort of a special access program at Duke, but it was always under the radar screen. And the question was, can we provide that to more patients at a level that made sense? And so that was sort of the birth of the idea of our program. We started off initially with two physicians, three physicians. We currently have seven general internists. We have one cardiologist. We are currently operating out of two sites for access for our patients. And we continue to grow. Part of that, I believe, is always market-driven. We're in a high-growth area. If you look at some of the other academic concierge practices and where they're situated, they're in large metroplex areas with lots of need for patients. In Durham, but Raleigh's right next door, and lots of patients. And if you think about the region, you think about the state, it's a great market to be in at a time when people are looking for care. And within an academic medical center, they're looking at, you know, brand name and recognition. So Duke has a great name and a great reputation, and reputation will carry you so far. You have to deliver, right? And so I think one of the at least early benefits of working in an academic medical center is brand name recognition. That'll get your foot in the door, but then you have to continue and provide quality care at a high level so that they stay with you.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's so many different questions I want to ask you, because I think there's so many intricacies and subtle nuances that you encounter with your membership-based practice inside of the academic medical center. And I think there's probably three different buckets. You know, when we look at pros and cons for the patient, pros and cons for you as a physician, and maybe pros and cons for the practice as a whole. And let's, you know, you kind of touched on it a little bit with the brand awareness. So for our listeners who maybe aren't aware, I actually did a residency there at Duke in infectious diseases. And when you talk about a world-renowned reputation, it wasn't uncommon for our attending physician to miss rounds in the evening because some prince in the Middle East was sick. And the attending physician at Duke was the one who would get the global consult to take care of that particular patient. So it is absolutely world-renowned reputation at Duke. And when we talk about this model of, you called it service-based care, membership-based medicine, we call it the intersection of consumerism and healthcare. This is really, if you were going to give patients the opportunity to build a primary care model, this is what they would build. So talk to me a little bit about some of the intricacies from a patient's perspective. You know, what do they get that kind of gives them a leg up versus going to a private practice? And what things do we maybe think from the outside they would get, but in fact, when you kind of dissect it, that's really not the case.
Yeah. So I do believe that patient expectation is important. And so with a great brand, there's great expectations, and you have to sort of manage that in both ways. It is interesting that our practice is made up of a lot of employees, but new people coming to the Triangle area. And when you think about patients who come to the area, they really want to go to a health system or a medical center that really provides a wide range of services. So I would say that while we are a primary care concierge practice, we can act as a gateway for many of our patients for all the specialty care that is provided at Duke. And I think patients actually see that as value. Not that they need it, but many times patients will always ask, and if I get sick and I need something, will I be able to access the system? And the answer is yes. I mean, we work closely with our specialists. The integrated medical record has been a boom for us with respect to communication. Obviously, that fosters care. And I think from a patient experience, from a patient expectation that they are getting quality medicine with access to specialists, I think is an important thing. Our patients all know that we teach. And I think there is a perception that as we teach, we try to stay current on issues that relate to healthcare. And that is true. I mean, as part of our academic mission, when we work with our medical residents in their clinics or medical students, they keep us on our toes. The latest and greatest things and abbreviations and treatments that I may not have heard about come to mind, and I have to look them up so that I understand what they're talking about. But I think it's a two-way street. They keep us on our toes, and we try to provide a model of care for them. So I think there is that synergism But from a patient's perspective, again, I think they get that experience that you're doing more than just patient care. You're doing education. We may not be doing research, but we are doing education in different niches. Yeah. And so I think from a patient's perspective, they think that's added value. They believe that's added value.
I want to come back to the research topic here in just a minute. But before we get there, talk to me a little bit about access to medications, access to services, you know, specifically with COVID. So many of, with all but one of our practices that I'm aware of in the ROMS network, none of them had access to the COVID vaccine. So, you know, most of it has been distributed through hospitals and health systems. Did your patients have, you know, more ready access to the COVID vaccine as a function of your association?
No, I think that was an expectation. But obviously that was by nature of the way that the system was designed, which was federal distribution at a state level, and at a state level distributing and providing what access they had to vaccines to the medical centers, to health departments. I think early on we were with everybody else. We did not have the supply that we needed with the demand. One of the advantages of being within a medical center is we were able to mobilize and structure what we needed to do. So whereas we knew that the supply was limited, we also needed to set up a scheduling and distribution process. And the ability for us to do that as a small practice obviously would have been very limited. But using the scale and the skill set of Duke and all the many people, we were able to at least organize and set expectations right. When the first cut for eligible patients were people over 75 with medical issues, we were able to figure that out. We still didn't have enough vaccine, but we were able to figure out who those people were. Issues like PPEs, issues like the changing rules and regulations and recommendations for isolation and for care for patients. Those were always evolving, and we were doing it sort of in the context of an academic medical center, working with our infectious disease specialist and our other administrators, so that we at least had cutting edge information on a daily basis about what to change. And early on, as you remember, everything was changing, right? So first you do this, and then you do this, and then you don't do this, and even things like testing. So again, we were able to leverage the medical center to do what we needed to do and communicate to our patients in a way that made sense.
You touched on this kind of in passing at the very beginning, but do you find that most of the patients that come to your the private diagnostic clinic are individuals, or are they coming to you through employer plans?
Our biggest growth has been just individual word of mouth. We started with a base of employees who knew the physicians in the practice. There was always a transition of some of our physicians from a traditional primary care practice into a concierge model. And because of those relationships over time, they just moved over. So we were able to start with a basic cohort. And it is interesting that, again, most of our growth has been really through word of mouth and patients. And so we have these cohorts of patients who know each other. And when we do talks or when we have presentations, they all sort of come in together. We do have some corporate contacts in connection with our executive health program, and that tends to be a feeder for our program also. So again, another advantage of an academic medical center is there are other programs, there are other practices within an academic medical center who know us, and they know that patients need, you know, intensive primary care, and we get those internal referrals. So it's been a good mix.
Yeah, you've talked about the research piece and teaching and education. I think one of the, you know, we've within the ROM network, we've kicked around the idea of ROM actually being a convener to host a residency program that would allow, you know, this opportunity to rotate through all these different independent clinics. Almost all of our physicians, you know, were birthed from, you know, academic backgrounds.
Exactly.
And they know what that, the fulfillment that you get from being in that space and how you get to stay sharp and, you know, at the cutting edge for all of the new technologies that are coming out. Talk to us a little bit about your opportunities to get more teaching experience than you might have at an independent practice because of the academic affiliation.
Yeah. So again, at a high level, if you think of an academic medical center is carrying three shields, the first one is excellent patient care. The second one is education, and it's education of med students and residents and everybody. And then the third shield would be scholarly activities such as research. And it's really hard to do all three, and most people can do one very good, but it takes people who want to be able to do more than one shield. So, and in this case, it would be patient care and education. And the model of a concierge practice with less emphasis on productivity and more emphasis on quality and time allows us the time to actually do some of those activities. So within our practice, we have physicians who work with the residents in their clinics. We have one of our physicians is actually working with interdisciplinary learners, not just med students, but nursing students, PT students. And we have another one. We have another physician who is in charge of medical residents with respect to board review. These are structured educational programs. And again, their ability to do that from a time perspective is made possible because of the structure of a concierge practice. We're not counting visits. We're really counting quality of care and number of lives we can carry. And the other thing that sometimes it's a benefit is because we are in an academic medical center, we probably have access to patients who have been giving to the institution, and they sometimes give to the practice because they know how difficult it is to practice real medicine. And we take some of those gifts and we actually help support education. So it works both ways, where we directly support it and we indirectly support it through gifts that our patients have provided to us, which is unique, which I think is unique. And that helps offset the mission of the department and the school with respect to education. So I do think our practice specifically, and in general for most academic medical centers, you'll get this hybrid of patient care and education, which is very important.
Do you have specific components of your day or hours in your week or your month that are carved out for teaching activities, or are those compensated the same as your office hours? How does that work?
So, teaching activities never seem to be compensated at the same level. And so there's always sort of a delta or a difference. But again, we're able to support that through support that we've gotten through our patients. So one of the things that we have to work on in an academic medical center is our compliance issues and compliance rules. And so early on, we were told that as we build our concierge practice, we can't sort of mix and match different practices. If we're going to be doing a concierge practice, we have to do it in a set practice in a certain setting. And if we provide care for others, not at a concierge model, we have to do it in a different model. So because of that, when we do our teaching, we're actually clinic physically outside of our site. We're working within a different clinic, within the hospital. We're working with the residents in a different site. So we actually take time off. So we will take a half day off and we would spend 4 or 5 hours with them, and then we return to the practice for the balance of the day. If we were teaching a course, we would essentially cut out 3 to 4 hours of our day and do that. And again, we have the capacity to do that because of the way our model of care is arranged.
Right, absolutely. So talk to me a little bit about some of the, you mentioned in our pre-call that there's a shift that's coming in your ownership model of your practice because of some of the large payer contracts, and you're moving away from truly being independent and being more of a hospital owned. Can you elaborate on that for our listeners a little bit?
Yeah. So, you know, I think this is the business of medicine, and within the business of medicine, there is a lot of changes, including alignment and amalgamations of practices. And, the same can be said with academic medical centers all throughout. If you've seen one academic medical center, you've seen one academic medical center. And Duke, for lots of reasons, is very unique. So under the umbrella of Duke Health, we have our acute, we have Duke Health System, we have the School of Medicine, we have the private diagnostic clinic, and we have the School of Nursing. And each of those units are working to take care of patients, but the PDC, the practice that we are under, is really a for-profit practice. We work with the not-for-profit entities within Duke Health to really provide coordinated care. And because of that, we're able to do certain things that a sort of not-for-profit organization can do. Because of resources and support, we're able to start up a program like this. Because otherwise, if you were trying to do it within a in a different model, you would have to sort of fight and argue and look for support for this. But within a private model, we said, yeah, we can do this. We think it makes sense. We'll give them the startup money. We'll make the investment up front to make it work. And really, for most practices, obviously, many of your listeners in a private concierge practice, it's a 3 to 5 year return. You start a practice, and somebody has to make that investment to get going because it's needed. If you compare academic faculty to those in private practice, in general, academic faculty members will make less. And because we're also supporting the educational mission, there is a lot of inherent inefficiencies that sort of get magnified and duplicated. So you need to have that financial model and that financial investment up front. And that could be done depending on the model. That can be dependent on the financial model. But you also need the right people. You need the right people who want to do that, right? And I think that's one of the things that maybe is different about our group. Everybody wants to do clinical care and they want to do something else. And so I think this model really has helped us do that.
How much has the health system gotten involved in dictating growth goals for the practice? Have they had an imperative that you have to continue adding new physicians? Is there an imperative to create a model that you can commercialize and turn out to other centers?
Yeah, I think when you talk about health systems, every health system is different. So at Duke, there's a primary care network that's sitting on the health system side. There's actually a primary care network that's sitting on our DPC side. Because we are in that small niche, we're not asked to grow just to grow. We're asked to grow to provide, valuable service. And in that case, we're not held to the similar standards that other practices are. I mean, financially, we still have to make a bottom line. We still have to pay the bills. We still have to support the staff. We still have to do all those things. But from a growth perspective, from a strategic perspective, we've been blessed because we actually have that leeway to make those decisions. Yeah. And again, that's going to be unique from practice to practice, right?
Yeah. You'd mentioned one of the perks of being associated with the Academic Medical Center during COVID was, having access to some of those infection control protocols and experts to make sure that your office was as safe as it could possibly be. And I'm sure there are many others. You'd alluded to one to me during our pre-call, though, around kind of practicing across state lines. And, where an independent practice might be able to take some liberties there and take some more risk, perhaps is a better way to phrase it. The Academic Medical Center has been more of a power over top of you.
I think, again, if you think about academic medical centers, and they have a local presence, they have a regional presence, and they'll have a national presence. And as you get to those larger groups, the rules become a little bit more complicated. Historically, if they're established with us, then you could potentially take care of patients, especially if they're coming back for care. But this whole concept and growth of telemedicine has sort of brought this into focus, right? Yeah. There's a lot of potential growth that we have as an academic medical center, looking for second opinions, looking for coordinated care. And that's actually some of the work we do. Our practice, while it's primarily a concierge primary care, we also do one-off consultative medicine, one-off consults for people who want to come in with undifferentiated disease, who really need a coordinator within an academic medical center. Yeah. We sometimes have special requests for for medical consults for, again, second opinions, and we were able to do that. And again, the traditional models, they all come to us, right? But in this new model of telehealth, you don't really have to come to us. We could do this, you know, we can do this like you're currently in Charlotte and I'm currently in Durham. We don't have to be in the same room, but it feels like that. And while conceptually it makes sense, there are rules and regulations that are beyond me that are being, you know, discussed at, you know, a state and a national level. But I do think that that's going to be a growth potential for all of us, especially in this model of care, right? Because you may see your, I have many patients who are national, and they will email me, they will call me, they'll send me notes. But I know that at least once a year, they come back to see me. But more and more, I have patients who are saying, you know, I can't come because of COVID. I can't come because of this. I can't get on an airplane. It's really coordinating their care in a way that you feel comfortable with and they feel comfortable with. And I think time will sort of tell how those rules and regulations will play out. One of the things that is going to be interesting with this new, is it the CARES Act, where patients get immediate access to their test results. So at Duke, what happens is every time if I order five labs on you, you will get a ping on your my chart that your lab results are ready. You will probably see them before I see them.
Oh, because you don't get a ping.
I got a ping, but I'm getting a lot of pings for all my patients. Mm-hmm. And patients sort of understand that, okay, I know you'll get back to me. I trust you'll get back to me. I understand that. And I think that that relationship is one of the things that I sort of value most with this type of practice, because you get to really know your patients.
Yeah. Dr. Pat, I really enjoyed the time with you. Well, one last question here, and intentionally open-ended. What are your prospects for the future of membership-based medicine here in the U.S.? What do you see on the horizon for us?
You know, I know this has been around since the late 90s, early 2000s, and there was some naysayers up front saying that it's never going to be a big part, but we have seen growth. We've seen continued growth in this type of model. It does get complicated when you start to slice and dice, a concierge practice with a direct primary care model. But I think that patients are looking for choices and options. There is a subset of patients who really want this care. There's a subset of patients who think they want this care, but what they really want is that relationship, that time to talk with somebody. And sometimes in a busy practice, we just don't have that. I do believe that this model is going to continue to grow. We've been very successful. We continue to be very successful, even within a context of an academic medical center. And so knowing that, I do think that it's always going to be a patient choice. Now, whether it's going to be an option, it's going to be interesting to sort of see how this plays out. But I do think that there's always going to be this model. And it's not just for the extremely rich or the wealthy, but it's really just even for everybody, for everyone who really wants that level of care.
Yeah, that's a misnomer that we've tried diligently to break down, is that this is, you know, just for the ultra wealthy, the ultra elite are the only ones that have access to this. And I couldn't agree with you more. This is becoming more and more readily available to people of all walks of life. Dr. John Pat, Associate Chief Medical Officer with Duke Private Diagnostic Clinic in Durham, North Carolina. You've been an exceptional guest. Thank you so much for joining us, and I hope you come back soon.
Scott, thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Roan Podcast. If you enjoyed your time here, be sure to subscribe. If you have a story you would like to share on The Roan Podcast, I encourage you to reach out. After all, we are stronger together. Now, I invite you to take a few for you and enjoy 3 minutes of relaxing audio. Be well, my friends.